You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
And welcome to Light Years. Sam Scandiari here, sitting in for Andy Liu, Vignesh from GSW Fast Break, the Warriors blog at the Mercury News, the heir apparent to the blog father, Adam Lauritsen. Vignesh, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Sam. Great to be on here. Happy New Year. I'm glad to be chatting with you.
Yeah, so we're recording this right after the Pelicans game. I don't really want to talk too much about this because how much can you really read into a game without Steph and Draymond? And we can now say it without Clay because apparently he's returning very soon. But still, some things to talk about tonight. So, like, let's start there. What are your initial thoughts on this game?
Initial thoughts, it's going to be hard to win games if Steph and Draymond and Clay aren't playing, if Jordan Poole doesn't score until 3.9 quarters of play have already happened.
Right.
On the flip side, what you saw in the last couple of minutes is exactly why the Warriors are so high on Jordan Poole. And why I think most of Warriors Twitter was super excited when they saw the article on his development and growth in The Athletic between Anthony Slater and Marcus Thompson II. It's a demonstration of potential and also kind of frustrating at the same time, because if that happens maybe 2 or 3, 4 minutes earlier or even before that, the Warriors have a chance to win this game. But on the flip side, again, they got a ton out of their rookies in Kuminga and Moody, and they saw enough there to at least be slightly excited. Unfortunately, right now, I believe last I checked, Phoenix is blasting the Clippers, and the Warriors may get Clay back on Sunday, no longer sitting atop the NBA in the Western Conference, which isn't a huge deal, but there you go.
Yeah, I mean, so you hit the nail on the head. So for me, this game kind of summed up Jordan Poole in every possible way. Young player, still finding his way. So if you're looking at this from the perspective of like, is Jordan Poole ready to play in a Western Conference Finals? A game like tonight will make you timid. But then at the same time, a game like tonight is why I'm a Jordan Poole believer, personally. It takes a lot of stones to play as horrible as he did and not waver in confidence at the end of a game. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, his skill level
100%
probably isn't to where he wants it relative to competing in the NBA, but like, and he is very skilled, but like in terms of he's going to get better, but like, I'm not worried about him getting shook in a play. You know, really, that was my main takeaway from the play-in last year. Excuse me. But like in general, he has like the mental confidence that like the staff, Clay, Draymond, like the players we've kind of associated with the golden era of the Warriors and everything. It's like, you know, he's whatever his ceiling is, I feel very confident he's going to hit it because I don't see a guy who's like going to get scared in the moment.
100%. I think there was a moment right before he went nuts where he was kind of not sulking, but the body language isn't great as he strolls over to the bench. And then he comes back out and does what he did over the last couple of minutes. And like you said, that takes stones. That's not easy to do. Obviously, the Pelicans let their foot off the gas just a hair, but it's still NBA players, still NBA competition. They're still a team that's a tough out when you're missing so many people for the Warriors. So I agree with you. I think he's a guy who you can't count on for production, but you can count on to always throw the ball up and put up shots and do his thing. If
he might be perfect
under the right circumstances,
he might be perfect for the sixth man role, at least in the short term, for that reason.
Exactly.
What is a six man? You're hoping someone who changes the energy of the game. He's always going to affect the energy when he gets in the game, for better or worse. And there you know, we'll see what they look like when Clay comes back and you know, obviously Steph and all that. And he's kind of in a more pure six man role instead of what he's been for this season, which is really just like the pure secondary playmaker and often with the starting unit. But I think it's going to really work for him in the short term. And it's going to be cool to watch, because I'm going to always associate the fight with Draymond Green on the sideline, now that Marcus and Slater gave us like the insight into the quotes. What was the exact thing? Draymond was like complaining and he's like, say it to my face.
Exactly.
Yeah. Step right up to him. And that's kind of like, for better, I'm going to associate that with Jordan Poole in the best way possible going forward. Cause it's like, you know, he may be a little inconsistent with the shot sometimes. Some of the passes he throws, although not tonight, but like some of the passes he throws, you might not always, you're like, I don't know where he was going with that. But it's like, he competes very hard and he's not going to let anyone bully him.
He's a gamer. At the risk of oversimplifying it, he's a guy who has supreme
confidence. Let's throw every cliche out there.
Yeah, let's do it while we're here. Gamers, supreme confidence, no conscience, memory of a goldfish. You get the picture. He's going to put up every shot as if he has not missed his last 20. And that's a good thing, honestly, for the Warriors.
Yeah. So let's get the second story of the game from a Warrior perspective, Jonathan Kuminga. Man, do you watch Kuminga like me and go like, good Lord, if the Warriors can keep the development curve like going in the correct direction, it's like just untapped potential, like can blank canvas, like can be just so good, like just prototypical, like wing with every time I watch him, I'm just like kind of giddy at the potential he has, right?
I thought we had seen probably one of the highest potential players last year when James Wiseman did all kinds of crazy stuff on the court, for better or for worse, right? But the highs were so damn high.
Yeah.
And I look at Kuminga and I'm like, have we found someone possibly even more raw and athletic and skilled in some ways? And yet in a weird way, ready to be on the floor right now and kind of challenging for minutes. I think the lapses are going to be there. He's 19 years old. He's like a decade younger than all of us, both of us chatting here. And
see for yourself. No.
Yes. But every time I see him step on the court, he looks like he belongs. And yeah. I mean, today at the end of the game, the finish off the steal of the inbounds where his head is literally above the rim and he kind of just guides it home. My head was spinning because I'm like, we've kind of seen this before, but not this soon from someone and not with this level of consistency. I mean, his stat line doesn't jump out at me. He's got 13 points on 14 shots, but you got to remember six of those shots came on one possession where he kept tapping the ball off the backboard.
Yeah. I was going to say that one possession. What I have not seen that from Kuminga all year. So talking about the possession, was it in the first or the second quarter? It was right around there.
Somewhere between the first and the second.
It's not relevant, but he, it's like a play I associate with like Carmelo Anthony, like yeah. The bully ball, like, you know, misses a shot, gets his own rebound, misses it, gets his own rebound and misses it, and then puts it in. And it's kind of like, and he was doing against Jackson Hayes, who's a pure center and a very large human, 7 feet tall. And that was just kind of like, I mean, I think the thing that's jumped about Kuminga is like, he's super strong for a teenager who doesn't even have like a fully developed body, right? Like he's just natural strength. And that's one of those plays where like, dude, when this guy fills out, like when he is in his mid 20s or late 20s and like gets like quote unquote grown man strength, he's going to be like Kawhi Leonard-esque, where, you know, like Kawhi has those plays where like, oh, he just moved someone out of their way by virtue of the fact that he's got like monster shoulders and he's got like the strong, he's just stronger than him, right? Like that's like the type of thing that I could see Kuminga developing into with just the way he can use his strength.
The play I remember, speaking of Kawhi, is when in the finals he kind of shed Looney, and I think Looney got hurt on the play. And
yeah, dude, Looney, Looney tore cartilage in his collarbone on that play. I know exactly the play you mean, because I've never seen a center just fly backwards that way when he's got like elbowed from a wing.
Exactly. It's that strength. And Kuminga has shades of it for sure. Again, 19 years old. I keep fixating on that number, not because, well, partially it makes me feel old, but also because there's just so much developmental curve. He's going to be one of those guys like Brandon Ingram, who played great today, by the way, who's like been in the year for 7 years and he's still only like 24, 25, 26 years old. That's a large development curve. And the other player I think who has that pattern is Andrew Wiggins, who also had a great game today, if we want to spend a little bit of time on him.
Yeah, we should definitely talk about Wiggs. So what did you think of his game? Steve Kerr did not close with him. And when Kerr was asked about that, he's like, just was going to ride the lineup I had that was working at the end. I mean, everyone knows this was a throwaway game. They were not playing their main guys. Like, if they had Steph and Draymond, A, those guys would have been inserted, and B, Wiggins would have been inserted with them. But Steve, he knew he had a quote-unquote preseason game here, right? Like, he knew he could play with it a little bit, even though they're going to fall out of first place. He knew, whatever, I'm going to see what Kuminga has in the closing lineup. With that said, I thought Wiggins played a pretty good game. I don't know if I'd call it a great game or anything, though.
Yeah, nothing spectacular. I mean, the box score reveals the reality, which is his three-point shot went missing. On the flip side, we saw a lot of aggression from him put in a pretty tough position, kind of harkening back to his Minnesota days, where it's give Wiggins the ball, get out of the way. Poole's got nothing. No one else can really create their own shot. Otto Porter can kind of dance around screens, but it was really Wiggins or bust for a lot of possessions. And he did a pretty good job staying aggressive, didn't settle for too many jumpers, despite being 1 of 6 from three, still finished 7 of 17 from the floor. Not a spectacular game, but there were a couple of flashes again that show kind of new things or simplifications to his game that will only become more evident and pay bigger dividends once the Warriors get the spacing with Clay back. And I think that's a positive sign for the Debs.
Yeah, for me it was, and I don't mean this as a negative thing, it just shows that he is a third or fourth option. He's not the guy. We knew that. I mean, it's like, yeah, when Steph and Draymond are creating everything and they are the two best players on the team, he's wildly efficient finishing plays, cutting off the weak side, hitting catch and shoots. You know, he had like how many 8 for 12, 9 for 14 type of shooting nights he had this year, you know, where it's just like, I know it says he missed a couple shots, but I don't remember him missing a shot when exactly. I was watching the game. And tonight it's like, all right, we're missing Steph, we're missing Draymond, we need you to create a little bit. And he becomes a little less efficient. And it's just kind of it's like a simple reminder to who he is. Overall, I think it's a positive game because, like you said, if this was Minnesota Wiggins, he probably also would have stopped competing. And that wasn't the case. I thought he was aggressive most of the way through, and I'm going to take that with him. Like, my fear with Wiggins always, like, if he stops being aggressive, if he stays aggressive, exactly. I don't really care if he misses shots. Like, it's going to happen every now and then. It's more about the mindset with him.
For sure. And I think the other piece is when we get to the crucible of the postseason, having Wiggins as a fourth option looks so much different than having Wiggins as a first or second, like you said. And that will be needed at some point. You know, there's going to be a game in the postseason where options one and two are misfiring. And Wiggins has shown, like, as long as you give him a little bit of space and keep it simple and don't force him to do too much, he can be hyper efficient in that role. And I think tonight was the opposite end of the spectrum where we're saying, hey, everyone's out, Wiggins, do something for us. His efficiency didn't wane as much as I expected, and that's a positive. Put it in the bank, ride home to Chase Center, and prepare for Clay's return.
Yeah, I mean, you'll take it. 7 for 17, but 21 points, 7 times to free throw line. Like, in general, I'll take that. 7, everyone's out. By the way, shout out Brandon Ingram. Phenomenal player.
Amazing.
He is, not to dwell on Pelicans players too much, but like, he is going to be Zach LaVine or Devin Booker, or what I mean by that is like the guy who, whenever he ends up on a team that's not a flaming dumpster fire, all the narratives about him not being a winning player are going to disappear, and people are going to be like, wow, he is really good. This guy's really good. He arguably plays on the least talented team in the NBA when you consider Zion's out and just like couple of the other factors on that Pelicans team, like, I don't know, man, like Herb Jones looks nice, but like that shouldn't be like the second best guy I think of when I think of their team, you know, like they're just, I mean, he's really stuck in a bad situation. I think he's going to be so good, though, or he is so good.
I feel bad for him. He's a casualty of Le GM and all of the detritus of some of those trades. I couldn't agree more. I thought the two standouts for me were Herb Jones everywhere, particularly on defense. He crushed the souls of the Warriors.
Nice find.
Amazing find. And Brandon Ingram, of course, like the efficiency, the size, the shooting, the polish. The
handle.
Yeah, crazy. He's like, I understand, and I hate to compare someone to someone as incredible as Kevin Durant, but it's an easy comparison, right?
Sure.
You see the similarities, kind of pogo stick, very skinny, decent handle, can shoot from anywhere, has the
feels
range.
Feels like they don't miss mid-range shots like ever. Yeah.
Ever. But someone who would really benefit from a change of scenery, I agree. Or a complete revamp of the roster because what did I hear? Zion is rehabbing in Portland, Oregon or something. He's not even in New Orleans.
Nothing about that situation seems healthy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let's move forward. This is far too much time spent on
a throwaway game. Exactly. Yeah.
So I feel like there's two big stories with the Warriors right now. The first one is Steph Curry's struggles. So I'm going to pull up some numbers for you as we talk about. Obviously, everyone saw the Dallas game, 5 for 24. We didn't pot after that one. I was going to do 2 for 1 here. And then right before that, it was 3 for 17. Now, neither of those ones really bothered me because he's had back-to-back poor shooting games in the past. But if you take this farther back, since the 30th of November, Steph is shooting 36.7% from the field, 34.7% from three. We're talking 16 games for him, 17 for the team. He sat one game, 18 now. He sat two games. I don't think he's ever had a streak where he shot at this poorly for this long. And I have some theories on it, but I want to start with you. Like, what are your initial thoughts here? Like, are you concerned?
I'd be lying if I said I wasn't. I know I shouldn't be, but it's part of the nature of fandom to kind of, especially when the team is this good, when you see something like this happen, you do start to like look around a little bit and be like, hey, is anyone else worried? What's going on? I wrote about this in my last article and I shouted you out. It seriously looks like since November 30th, the Monstars kind of sapped his powers, particularly over the last couple of games. And I have a bunch of theories as well, and I'll throw them out there. I've got kind of the pressure angle, the personal angle, and then also kind of some assorted ideas around rotation patterns and stuff. Kind of going in order, the pressure angle is a combination of things. The Warriors have put a ton of pressure on him and arguably Draymond's shoulders, but particularly on Steph to kind of carry the offense. And this is something that's extended for a long time. You throw into that kind of being the top dog again, like the hunted versus the hunter. The Warriors sit atop the Western Conference. They're getting every team's best shot night in, night out. Layer on top of that, the three-point chase, every three that he makes is now a new record, kind of extending that 160-game streak. I know Steph has said repeatedly, like, yeah, you know, I don't really care about it. That narrative shifted a little bit, and he was talking about, oh, I'm going to chase 16 against Portland. In retrospect, kind of amped up the intensity of everything around the whole chase. That's got to wear on someone, particularly over the last 2 years when there is no Clay as an outlet valve and it's at live or die by Steph.
Yeah. So let's start on the first one, the pressure one. So I feel like it's undeniable that when he was pursuing the record, so I'm talking like that early December,
totally,
you could see it was wearing on him a little bit. Other than that, I don't know that I think pressure is a thing. And I don't know that I buy that one. What I think is a stranger theory here, and this is one that's been posted by Light Years listener Tommy Gunn, and Jason Maples, friend of the show, has also said it. And they've said he's hunting the three too much. They think Steph's always going to take more threes than anyone, but like the decision to try to want to get 15 to 20 up a game and just completely avoid the mid-range instead of trying to do a balanced diet attack, sorry guys, is leading to him being almost easier to guard. And kind of instead of like one of Steph's best qualities is he plays in flow and kind of plays off the defense. Trying to get him to take threes has him playing out of the flow a little bit. I personally don't know if I buy that theory, but I can see where it comes from, because particularly over the last month, how many times have you seen him like pull back from a driving lane and try to take a three when it's like, buddy, that you had a nice free throw line jumper, right? Wide open. Just take it. You know,
I think the good sign over the last couple of games is results accepted. Steph did change it up, particularly against the Mavericks. He took, I think after starting a woeful 1-for-9 from three, the rest of his shots were mostly inside. I know he put up a three up.
He didn't make them either, by the way.
Yeah, they didn't go in. Yeah. The process change was good. It was just that's one where I definitely buy the idea that it makes the Warriors a little bit simpler to guard, because towards the end of the game, the Mavericks were essentially calling out Steph relocations before they happened. They had no kind of fear of him doing anything other than what they've seen scouted so much. And so I do buy a little bit of that argument. I think another factor here though is, and you've tweeted about this a lot, is just there are open shots that are just not going down. And we're not talking merely open shots. We're talking wide open shots that you'd expect a guy like Steph to can. And to see them not go in is kind of surprising. And it's been kind of that way for this month-long period. And if those start going down, you know, the percentages start to go up. You have to respect him a little bit more. He gets into a rhythm, a flow. We're kind of on my third point, which is the basketball tactics and rhythm angle. Another thing to throw out there is the fact that the rotation pattern is not what he's used to. And it's been that way all season. Worked fantastically early in the season. And Steph always said, you know, I'm not a huge fan of it. He likes to play the entire first quarter, come back in 6 minutes left in the second, and so on. But I think that can't help a notoriously rhythm and streak-based player like Steph.
Yeah, so let's go backwards. So let's work back to the whole hunting threes thing. Like the Warriors offense, at least until Clay comes back, like I would say since the end of last year, they've leaned into basically we are going to put hyper pressure on you with Steph from three. Like they've leaned into the idea of, no, he's going to take 50 of them. Literally 50, yep, if you give it to him. And that's going to open up driving lanes for everyone else. And we're okay with Steph being less efficient because it opens up driving lanes. And it should be noted, during this time period where he shot the ball disgustingly, for his standards, by the way, he's been a positive in all but two of those games. Literally, yep, even that Dallas game, he was a net zero. And he could not have played worse individually in that game. So like it speaks to the strategy of like, we don't care if Steph has bad numbers if it benefits everyone else. With that said, like, I just don't think this team is going to go anywhere if Steph doesn't figure out his shooting, right? Like they're not going to win the title with Steph going, 6-for-20, but it creating driving lanes for Andrew Wiggins, you know, like they're going to beat the Sacramento Kings doing that. They're not going to beat the best teams in the league later in the playoffs. So he's got to figure it out. I honestly think the two theories I think are the most likely are fatigue, because he's carrying an ungodly load and he is getting older. and the ball. I legitimately think for a player who's as touch based as him, I think he might be. He said he doesn't like the new Wilson ball. I just keep pointing to that because I can't find anything else. Because when I look at it, he's missing so many open shots. Like you just mentioned that. You look at his numbers, he's hitting contested threes at the exact same rate he always has. He's missing open shots. Like, you can't tell me that's a subject of too much defensive pressure when he's wide open, you know?
No, it's not.
For his standards, he's hit that, you know, coming off a curl with a defender 5 feet away from me, three-pointer pretty much since college. He's missing it now, or he's just bricking it out now. Like, I think he's going to inevitably snap out of it, but like, it's just bizarre because I've never seen him have a slump like this before.
There's always that annual kind of Steph downturn, but I agree with him. It's never been to this degree. And the weird part is there's been signs of him like busting out of it. And then he kind of slides right back into it. That's the weird thing. It's like when he's slumped, it's like he's trash for a series of games. And then there's the detonation at the end of it. It's like, ah, okay, now we're back.
Right.
This has been like up and
down. Like against, you know, he was slumping and then he had the Sacramento and the Memphis game. And you're like, Steph's back. And then on Christmas, you know, he was good on Christmas, but he was kind of inefficient. And then it just slumped right back into whatever the hell we're seeing these last like five games. So
the real answer is probably some impossible to quantify combination of some parts of all the things we're talking about. It's like the ball, the fatigue, some pressure in some aspects, right. Rotations, It's impossible to know, and Steph certainly is still kind of keeping an even keeled approach. And I didn't expect him to do a post game presser yesterday, but he did, which I thought was good on him to kind of talk us through what he's going through. I think the results will come. I'm not particularly worried. I'm kind of doing group therapy with you on this pod has helped me feel a lot better about this. He's going to snap out of it, and we're going to be laughing about this hopefully. But I do think there are things in this that are worth the Warriors kind of looking at. The biggest thing I think is how unidimensional does the Warriors offense get if they're hunting too many threes? And like you said, driving lanes for Wiggins or God forbid Looney in the postseason is something defenses will take all day. The cousin to that is at what point do the Warriors leverage Steph's gravity to get Steph going,
right,
as opposed
right.
to leveraging Steph's gravity to get everyone else going?
Yeah. I mean, and that's the reality of it. I've made a killing out of making fun of Westbrook for playing martyr ball, you know, like there's hero ball and then there's martyr ball where, you know, I will not let anyone else get a rebound because I will save the day. You know, in some ways, Steph is playing, they're playing martyr ball where it's like, I will take all five defenders on me at all times so everyone else can thrive. Like, he's playing like a kind of martyr ball that's actually beneficial to his teammates. So it's a different thing. But it's like, at a certain point, he's your most talented player and he can score with three guys guarding him. But like, shouldn't you be looking for ways to get him going? The answer is, of course, no for this team, because this team is like, it's very clear that they like the fact that Steph lets them play defensive lineups that no other player would allow them to play. Like, there's no other player in the NBA who would let you play Gary Payton II, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond, and Looney together. And there just isn't. But, like, that is a just world-beating defensive lineup. And so they're like, so it's going to be ugly on offense. Whatever. We'll still come out with more points ahead. Those are the type of things Steph allows you to do that other players don't. I just wonder if it's long-term sustainable as we get closer to the playoffs. When I say closer, I'm at the halfway point. But like at this point, the Warriors are for real and they're contending. So everything's with an eye to the playoffs. But the flip side to it could be, it's as simple as this. Don't worry about it till you see what Klay looks like when he comes back. Because that's a player you put into lineups who commands not as much, but a lot of defensive attention that's similar to him. And maybe this all goes away. Maybe we just have to deal with the fact that, like, look, Steph played this way, commanded all this attention, so the Warriors could get out ahead. Do you really care about Steph's individual stats? Like, only because it's kind of fun to look at. But yeah, like, in the scheme of things, I'd rather the Warriors win the game than anything about his stats. And that brings us to what I want to close on this pod about. Not 100%, because we have a quote from Steve Kerr saying, Rick Celebrini will make the decision on Saturday. Granted, we always knew that's how it was going to go. But everyone and their mom is expecting Klay Thompson to make his return on Sunday. They flexed a game to get the Warriors there on Sunday. Although Steph versus Evan Mobley is worth the flex alone. And, you know, like all that sort of stuff. Let's talk about Klay's return real quick. How excited are you for, knock on wood, Sunday night?
I don't know if you can hear the exuberance in my voice. I've been told that my voice doesn't carry that well, but I'm giddy, man. I can't understate just how cathartic the experience of seeing a guy who has never shot a basketball at Chase Center, whose last, the last vision we have of him on a basketball court.
I didn't even think about it from that perspective.
Like the last memory we have of him is him coming back to the chance of Warriors at Oracle to make through two free throws on a torn ACL and tell Steve Kerr, I'll be back in 5 minutes. It's nothing.
Were you at that game?
I was not. I was, this is a weird kind of tangent, but I was on a plane traveling at 35,000 feet to Europe for a music tour. And I was desperately, I paid United, I think like $200 in repeated Wi-Fi attempts to try to get access to the game. The best I could do is track it. And eventually I saw the tweet, like Klay has gone down. I'm like, oh crap. I've never watched the entirety of that game.
So I'm going to give you some story time. I went to that. Yeah. I was at that game.
Yeah.
And so if you remember the series, first off, this will get forgotten in history, but the game five in which KD tore his Achilles may have been Steph and Klay's finest hour. The final 2 minutes of that game was Steph and Klay basically doing what Ray Allen did in that game six against the San Antonio Spurs. They had everyone ready to rush the court. Toronto's going to win their first title in Toronto. And shout out to them. Like, I understand how that feels from that perspective. And Steph and Klay literally, with Draymond shoveling passes and Iguodala on one leg, you know, at that point, Iguodala looked very old. They won that game. And if you go rewatch the end of game five, I would actually recommend watch the end of game five of the 2019 finals to remind yourself of how special Steph and Klay are together. Because it gets forgotten into lore because of what happened in game six. What happened earlier in game five and then what happened in game six. So I remember going to the game and in my head, I'm thinking, they're not going to close out Oracle on a loss. And, you know, given what's happened with KD, they'll probably lose in seven. But get through game six. No one knows what's going to happen in game seven. And that was the best basketball I've ever seen Klay Thompson play in my life. Through three quarters, I think he was 10 for 15. The numbers don't really put into justice the confidence he was playing with and just like the shot making he had. And when he went down, you could hear a pin drop in the place once everyone realized what happened. He walks back. Then when he walked out, might have been the loudest I've heard Oracle since their first playoff run in 2012-13. Obviously, we believe was loud, but like in terms of the Warrior runs, those first couple of runs were louder. And then, of course, you know, people start coming and they get jaded and as with success comes this expectation, you don't realize how special something you're watching is sometimes.
Totally.
With that said, it's still like one of the wildest experiences I've ever had watching the whole thing. No one in the crowd knew what was going on with him. Yeah. You kind of just thought like, it's Klay. He's going to come back. It's going to be fine. You know, that sort of. And that was 30 months ago. Think about that.
937, I forget the exact number, but it's an absurd amount of time ago.
I shot on Twitter because a friend sent it to me, but like the last time Klay played a game, Russell Westbrook was on the Thunder. He's been on four teams since then. Four. Chris Paul and James Harden were on the Rockets. Paul George was on the Thunder. Kawhi Leonard was in Toronto. LeBron had, he'd made at least 18 excuses since then for why he hasn't done certain things. I mean, we can keep going out. Anthony Davis was in New Orleans, it's just wild how much we didn't have a pandemic. In
none of us knew what I did not, Greek letters.
I did not know what a pandemic was right then. Yeah. Right now it's, you know, it's, I'm just trying to figure out how to spell Omicron and not say Omarion. That's like my
exactly.
big thing. It's just, it's so long. So, I mean, the pod we're going to do, and Andy will be back before Sunday and we'll do that one. But like the pod we're going to do after that, it's going to be hard not to watch Sunday's game and get super emotional.
I've already told everyone and all my friends and everyone, like, I'm going to be locked in a bunker, just glued to the TV, and I'm going to have a pile of tissues next to me because it's almost guaranteed. And this is one of the weird things about sports, right? Is you subscribe so deeply to a team, you start to like get a feel for players, and it's like, you know them personally. And I know, like, you know, sports writers not supposed to use the word we, it's like, it's the team and you're covering the team, all that jazz. But as a fan, kind of unabashedly, we're like, yeah, this is our team. I feel like, given how interesting and beloved of a personality Clay is, I feel like I know him personally. I've never talked to the guy, but he's like a part of all of us as fans. He's a part of all of our lives. And we've seen kind of him at his lowest. And to be there to welcome him back when he hopefully soars to the top of the NBA again is going to be super cathartic for everyone. From a basketball perspective, like you said, Game 6 Clay is a real thing, but that particular Game 6 Clay, I lied, I've seen highlights of the game, I just haven't watched the whole thing together. We're talking about Clay at the apex of his powers.
By the way, I don't know if I could rewatch that game knowing what happened if I didn't see it live the first time. I might watch like parts of it, but I don't know that like I have the heart to start it from beginning to end if I was in your situation.
It's the same with Game 7 of 2016. Like, I watched it live, so I feel a little bit more comfortable knowing that, you know, Steph is going to get stopped by Kevin Love and Kyrie's going to hit a shot over his face. But I, like I said, I've not watched the injury except on highlights. But the highlights before are incredible. It's Clay catch and shoot off the dribble, kind of summoning up offense to carry a team that was still playing Quinn Cook, Jonas Jerebko, Alfonso McKinney heavy minutes because they had no other options. Like, that is, like you said, apex Warriors basketball, like the crowning shining achievement of Steph, Clay, Dre's tenure is like, we're out of bodies. Who do we go to? These are the people we go to. And eventually they ran out of steam, but not for lack of trying. So if we get Clay on, I've joked, like, last year the Warriors should have just put Clay out there in a wheelchair to shoot threes from the corner because it would have improved their spacing more than what they had available. But if we get, you know, 50% of Clay, 60% of Clay, and it slowly ramps closer to 70%, the Warriors are going to be an amazing team. They're already an amazing team, and this just adds another dimension to it.
Yeah, I mean, so by nature, I'm just like excited to see what Clay looks like and then just like engage in the nerdery, which is like postulating how that team will look going into the playoffs and everything. But I've told myself Sunday, for one day, I'm not going to do any of that. I'm just going to try to celebrate the fact that he's back. The following game can be the game we discuss if he looks slower or not, you know, just all the random stuff we talk about with basketball, like how we were discussing, like, is Steph bothered by the ball? Like, that sort of stuff. Sunday, it just feels like if it's going to feel like a big family reunion in some ways, whether you're going to the game and for those of you who got those tickets to the game before the prices went through the roof, kudos, golf clap to you, whatever you want to say, because like you on the jackpot. But for everyone else who's watching on TV and just going to be enjoying it through social, it's going to feel like a family. It's going to feel like a family reunion in some way, because it's like everyone who follows the Warriors, particularly through social and like those channels, like you feel like you know everyone who posts every time the Warriors play. At least you know that part of them. Like, you know, there's certain people you follow who are like, that guy's a sarcastic, funny dude. Certain people you follow who like the sky is falling all the time. Certain people you follow who are like unabashedly, like always seeing the positive, right? All that sort of stuff. And it's just one of those seminal moments where I feel like everyone's going to drop the BS and just be like, man, he's back, you know, that sort of thing. And short of finals and stuff like that, though, it's just going to be a very cool moment. That's all I have to say.
100% agree. I can't wait till Sunday. I'm I'm hoping this Saturday clearance from Rick Celebrini is a formality, because otherwise there's going to be a lot of people who are very upset with the prices they paid for tickets.
By the way, that's a lot of pressure, Rick. I would not want to be the doctor who, like, because if you're wrong, that's a bad look. But no, I'm just like, yeah, that's, I guess that's why I didn't go into the medical field. So
Dr. Rick has had some of these big calls over the years, so I'm sure he'll do what's right for the players and make sure that Clay's in good shape to go. But it's been a steady ramp up, right? We've seen the videos, we've seen all the highlights. He looks ready to go. The rest is just going to come once he shakes off the rust and gets back into the flow of things. Sunday can't come soon enough. I can't believe it's 3 days away. I got to hold my breath for at least two of those and then get hyped for one more. It's going to be a long couple of days.
All right, Vignesh, appreciate you coming on. Anything you want to plug?
Nothing to plug. Go to blogs.mercurynews.com/warriors to check out Fast Break. Follow me on Twitter if you prefer. It's Viggy Fresh. Definitely check out the blog and go Warriors. Can't wait till Sunday. Thanks for having me, Sam. Appreciate it.